Hello, you're listening to Talk Hard, QuickFlix's official movie and TV podcast. I'm your host, Simon Morado. On today's show, I speak with Colin and Cameron Cairns, the writer-director duo responsible for the Aussie horror comedy 100 Bloody Acres. A review of that film follows. Please remember to wash your hands before listening. It's going to get dirty.
This is such nonsense.
No, it's not. It's the best sense I ever heard.
Now, we don't want to shaft our number one customer. We don't do that sort of thing here at Morgan Brothers.
If Charlie Wick wants new blend, he's going to get new blend. We hot-bone the lot of them now.
No one's going to be hot-boning no one.
You're not a bad person. You're a good person who's just done some bad things.
We've got liquid gold here, mate. We could fertilise the Nullarbor with this gear.
He wants my potassium!
Oh, I'll call for help.
It's not been a banner year for Aussie films, a sentiment I convey with absolutely zero relish. My end-of-year top 10 Australian features list is dangerously close to being canned on account of poor attendance, lest I relent and declare Goddess to be not that bad, all things considered. Mercifully, the Cairns brothers' wicked little splatter flick, 100 Bloody Acres, saves me from that fate, even if the characters in it are not shown nearly as much mercy. It stars Damon Herriman and Angus Sampson as Reg and Lindsay Morgan, brothers who run a fledgling fertiliser company in the South Australian outback. When they add human roadkill to their recipe, their orders increase exponentially. After the nervy but ultimately kind-hearted Reg picks up a trio of city-slickin' hitchhikers, their crimes threaten to escalate from mere corpse tampering to full-on murder. Reg would very much like to spare them, of course, particularly the affable former country girl Sophie, played by Anna McGann. However, when her doting boyfriend James, Oliver Ackland, and the jerk she's seeing on the side, Wes, Jamie Christian, happen upon a dead body in the back of the Morgan brothers' truck, Lindsay insists they meet their mulcher. I spoke to fraternal writer-directors Colin and Cameron Cairns about the inspiration for their comically gory flick, as well as the overwhelmingly positive response they've received from US critics, and getting the permission of a particular Australian actor to be featured in one of the film's most amusing scenes.
This is Colin, and next to me is Cameron.
Beautiful. If all else fails, I'll address it to the two-headed hydra that is the Cairns brothers.
Yeah, no, we're used to that.
I'd like to ask what the very first germ, you know, that first little spark of an idea was for 100 Bloody Acres.
It might have been a few germs, I think. One of the germs was we wanted to make a really brutal, no-holds-barred horror film in the vein of like a, you know, 70s indie horror, like a Chainsaw Massacre or Hills Have Eyes. I think one of the other germs was wanting to do something in real time and having this fanciful idea that we were going to shoot it all in one take, being the first horror film to be in one take. Mm. And that was never going to work out. It was, you know, a rather ambitious idea, but I think still some of that remains in the finished film.
Russian Ark meets Texas.
It meets Slacker.
Yeah,
it was going to be like the Slacker of horror films where, you know, one character would lead us to another character and then, and the journey would go on and on and there'd be all sorts of, you know, wild and bizarre incidents that happened along the way. And, like I said, I think some of that still remains. But they were some of the initial germs. I think also just, a desire to make a horror film and in Australia, the options are you make something out in the bush, out in the outback, and you know, I guess you sort of your options are limited. I don't know that we do slasher films all that great over here, or we don't have that sort of, you know, the kind of culture that the Americans can exploit so well with their teen culture and. That sort of thing just feels a bit naff over here, but we have this wonderful landscape where we can set horror films. And I think, you know, there was a desire to try and exploit that. But, Cole, any other...
I've got nothing to add. That's enough germs, I think.
There's plenty of germs, really. Well, those are the germs, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand you spent about 6-7 years actually writing the script. So once you got into the process of actually putting pen to paper or fingers to keyboards. Did the script itself go through many different iterations? Were you actually trying to write it as a single take movie, or were you trying to keep it in one setting? I'm curious if there were any other iterations that the script went through.
Definitely. I mean, when we say it took us 6 or 7 years of writing, I mean, we weren't locked up in our garret for that whole period. We have families and had to earn a living in other ways, but it was probably about that sort of duration that took from that germ to getting interest. But yeah, definitely the first draft, maybe first two drafts, were written as real-time horror. I'm pretty sure of that. It's a long time ago, Simon, but I reckon if we dug up those first drafts, first of all, we'd cringe at the writing. But I think, they were definitely written in that way so that one character would end up, there'd be a chase and we'd stay with those characters, and somehow that we had to get, they had to take us back to the main stage, and it would go on and on like that. And that's how we wrote the first draft. And I think, you know, that was a lot of fun, but it also presents problems. It's like, if you can't do this real time, if you've got characters have gone this chase and it's taken them 10 minutes from the main property, then you've got to follow them back. And that could potentially be pretty boring.
I think they came up with, stupid devices to get us out of that, like we'd follow telegraph lines.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Crack along this telephone wire to get us back to the house.
But you know what? It was all part of our education as writers. I think what it forced us to do was also, in those long periods where we're trying to get from one set piece to another, we had to write dialogue. I think the dialogue in the finished product is, I think we're reasonably good dialogue writers, and I think it's born of that, those early experiences trying to make that concept work. And ultimately, it kind of didn't, so we had to get a little more conventional and have the sort of parallel storytelling. But a lot of those elements are still there, I think. The spirit of that original impulse is still there in the finished film.
I think you made the right decision in the end. I was recently watching, speaking of slasher films, I was recently watching an episode of Hannibal where a character basically kidnaps Hannibal and they go for a drive that in reality would have taken 17 hours, I think I read on an article. And so it kind of raises the question, what kind of mix CD do you play with Hannibal on a road trip after that point? So cutting directly to the destination helps. I know you've cited Rope as one of your inspirations and you mentioned Slacker. Were there any other movies you kind of took inspiration from?
Oh, look, there's tons in there, and whether it's conscious or not is another question. Because, after watching the film or seeing it for the first time, you pick up on stuff that you've seen before but you weren't aware of.
Yeah.
I remember, Cole, you telling me how you were watching Raiders of the Lost Ark one night, and there's that sequence with Belloc and Marion with the knife, and she's trying to conceal the knife.
She's trying to seduce him but wants to, grab the knife and do it so she can, which is, a scene from our
film.
12-year-olds and thought, this is the pinnacle of filmmaking. So obviously that stuff has seeped into our subconscious and found its way into the film. But there'd be countless examples, and some that we would not be able to point out to you right now, and maybe in years to come will be. But, there are very obvious nods to films as well. I mean, one or two people have picked up on our little Kurosawa reference about three quarters of the way through. Simon, don't know if you picked up on that one.
I didn't actually. Can you give me a hint?
You'll have to watch it again.
All right.
Well, there's a reference, a double reference to Yojimbo, which one or two people have picked. We were very happy when they picked up on it, but they're pretty subtle, a bit too subtle for their own good, perhaps. But.
All right. I'm a Yojimbo fan. I'll go back to that. I'm happy to investigate that one. You two do write and direct as a pair. Can you talk a bit about how that process between the two of you works? Do you divvy up the load, or is it more of a shared experience?
I don't know. It's sort of, chops and changes, but it's mainly sort of split down the middle, I would say. But, if something needs to be done and the two of us can't do it, then one will do it. When it comes to the writing, it's...
Whoever's not doing the day job has to do it. A lot of the work for us is really just sitting around talking and trying to work through problems. And once we feel like we're going somewhere, we're excited by the idea or the solution to a problem, we'll one of us will go off and write it. And oftentimes there are multiple tasks to do. So, we will divvy up the workload. And, go off and do our write our scenes separately, and then come back, you know, a week later and put them together and see how it works. Hopefully it fits. You know, that game you do with kids where someone draws their head, folds it over, and someone else draws the body and someone else the legs. We kind of work a bit that way. But normally what you get isn't some Frankenstein monster. It actually, it's quite a seamless humanoid figure.
You're working with a lot of fake blood and prosthetics and probably some heated emotions. Were there any particularly rough days on set or any difficult effects that to execute?
Yeah, all very difficult to execute, and when you've only got 25 days to shoot, the pressure is always on. Never had an easy week, you know. It was like you get through one week, you hit Friday and you think, God, you know, I don't know how we got through that. You know, at least there will be a bit of respite next week. Mm. We've got these scenes to do, and it's just two people in a room, and that'll be easy. But then you get in there, and it's two people in a room, but then there's
a body dangling above a vat.
Yeah, or there's guns going off, you know, explosions and or prosthetics. And all that stuff takes a lot of time, a lot of preparation.
Mm.
So, you know, it's not to say it's not a lot of fun. I mean, it is. It's great watching all that stuff happen on set, but that's the stuff that you're always that's what keeps you the most anxious throughout a day. It's just the time, the time ticking away.
Yeah, we were, you know, for a fairly low budget film, we were pretty ambitious, and having elements like the dog, that's asking a bit much. And when you've got to shoot 4, 5, 6 minutes in a day, and you know, half those scenes include a dog that has to do some very specific things. You're setting yourself up for some tough times. But look, you know, fortunately the dog was probably the best behaved person on the set, and it all worked very well. That was meant. That was a joke. But I think some of the toughest times were working with a canine and it not doing the things we wanted it to, and trying to keep our cool and just be patient and. Waiting for the dog to come out of its trailer, all that sort of stuff.
Of course, they can be very persnickety, those dogs. Now, there has been an overwhelmingly positive response from critics, particularly in the US. It has a 91% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is pretty rare for a horror movie. Were you initially worried about how it would play for international audiences?
Not really worried, but
we made the film first and foremost for an Aussie audience. You know, we thought that would be where it would screen first. And in fact, it did miss last year. But, little did we know that it would actually make a sale to the States, and that would be the first place to screen it. So, we were intrigued to see how they respond.
Yeah.
But they've responded well. I mean, certainly the critics seem to enjoy it, and the audiences we've sat with in America really seem to dig the Australian-ness of it. A lot of the questions that got thrown at us after that previous screening we had in LA were about the music and who is this Chad Morgan, and you know, what does this saying mean? So I think it struck a chord in terms of the Australiana and the Aussie vernacular. But you know, it's not to say that we went out of our way to exaggerate that stuff. You know, when you set a film in the Aussie bush, people are going to speak a certain way and they're going to dress a certain way, and those locations are going to read a certain way. So we've been pleasantly surprised at the positive response.
I mean, obviously there's a lot of sort of specific Aussie cultural references in there that are going to go straight over their heads, but that doesn't seem to concern them, because I think, we're finding they're just getting into the story and the characters and that world so much that the odd little cultural reference, is not... In the big scheme of things, I don't really amount to much. They're not crucial to the story.
No.
They're there really for an Australian audience as jokes for a local audience to enjoy.
There's enough context there for an overseas audience to get what it means. You know, and there are particular, you know, we don't have to maybe mention the scene with Reg in his caravan where he sees the object of his desires. I mean, that got a big laugh with the Americans that we sat with. Because they got the context. They get what that character probably represented and what it meant to the character of Reg. So it's still got a laugh. Not as big a one as you get here, but a laugh nonetheless.
Well, I wanted to ask, actually, on that very specific topic, and I won't reveal the object of affection if we're considering that a spoiler, perhaps. Have you heard any feedback from that actor?
We had to get that actor's consent before we did the scene, because her image is all over the caravan.
His or her image.
His or her image. And the actor was really great about it. It was a real sport. Was, in fact, I think, a little flattered. And we finally got to meet that actor last year at MIFF, who was there for...
another film.
For another film. doing really good to not let the cat out of the bag here. But, yeah, she... he, or whoever it was... was most gracious and,
yeah.
And thanked us and said, can you write me a part in your next film? So
a speaking part.
Yeah.
Guys, can I ask to wrap up, what's next for you? Are you planning to go back to the US to do some work there, or are you some other local projects percolating?
Oh, well, we have a script that's pretty well developed. It didn't take us 10 years' time. It was more like a year or two. And it's a thing called They Shoot Hostages, Don't They? And it's a crime caper comedy. Is that enough C words? I think so. But, you know, it's still very much in the spirit of Acres. You know, it's a real sort of ensemble piece.
Bit of a romp.
Yeah. You know, lots of jokes, lots of great little set pieces, some lots of exquisitely gratuitous violence, and great characters, just fun characters. So we're sort of in the midst of, well, we're just sort of starting out on the sort of financing and journey with that one. So hopefully we'll be able to, yeah, get cameras rolling next year on that.
The Cares don't limit the action to a single location in 100 Bloody Acres, but the inspiration of such bottle movies as Rope is certainly evident. Usually these kinds of flicks cut straight to the bone crunching. The Cairns, with great wit and fleet-footed direction, keep us guessing. 100 Bloody Acres is a highly amusing little horror movie, elevated by uncommonly layered performances, particularly from Herriman and McGahn. Not to mention the voluminous amount of fake blood spewed, limbs torn apart, oddball sex scenes, and one particularly amusing drug trip. Now, I wouldn't necessarily describe any of that as witty per se, but funny? Sure. 100 Bloody Acres arrives in Australian cinemas August 1st. That'll do it for this episode of Talk Hard. Thank you so much for listening. If you have any feedback, comments, questions, shoot it to talkhard@quickflix.com.au, or you can chat with me directly on Twitter @SimonMorato. I hope you enjoyed Horror Week here on Talk Hard. Next week we'll have a brand new television revision special concerning a very, very good show that more people should be watching, so keep an ear out for that. Thanks to Blue Ducks for our theme song, RTRFM for their recording facilities, and you for listening. Until next time.
Scientists are saying the future is going to be far more futuristic than they originally predicted.